590 FM.
Fan morning shows, first night 590 fan. It's Haley and myself this
Don't
morning.
You wish this was simulcast on TV sometime?
Yeah, we were just
coming out of commercial break. To,
some great tunes.
I don't even know what I was doing. I don't know what you'd call that.
You know what? The coffee's kicked in. That's why.
I wish you all could see.
My dancing skills, not the greatest. The Blue Jays last night with an incredible finish once again. Come from behind, win there. Getting good at that. Julia Kreutz, Blue Jays reporter, MLB.com, and contributor at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That's us. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning to you guys. You will excuse me if I did not join you on the dancing at this time.
I know you're up late. I saw that your MLB.com story was posted at like 1:20. So appreciate you coming on, you know, grinding it out.
Waking up,
being a part of the show. You're just as much as a grinder as Alek Manoah was yesterday, coming in with the flu game. I just think that there's just an inevitability that he's going to be the face in the electric vibe of this city. What did you love? I mean, besides the fact that he came in and actually was able to perform, but are you just feeling the same type of love for Alek Manoah?
Yeah. Thank you for putting me in that same category. I've been known for being a little bit of a drama queen, and I don't know if I would have able to do what he did there. But it was really special to witness, right? It was something that you don't see every day. And him just retelling how taxing the night was the night before on Monday. And, you know, the fact that he considered going to the emergency room, that's how sick he felt. Mm-hmm. It's really endearing and commendable that he would understand where the team is, how much the team needs him. And obviously he was cleared by the medical staff. It's not like they just threw him on the mound while he was puking or anything like that. He had enough time to replenish his fluids. He got a round of IV when he got to the ballpark and just came in and dominated, and he was grinding. He was very clearly grinding. He didn't have his best stuff. His velocity was a little bit down. But he kept the Blue Jays in the game. He competed throughout. And 6 2/3 innings after spending a night where you couldn't sleep because you had a stomach bug, that is just the stuff of lore, right? The season is going to go down in history, I think, in Alek Manoah's career.
I couldn't agree more. That's basically, we just sat at the top of the hour and gave him the flowers and the praise he deserves. And he's continually been this consistent force, this pit bull on the mound, the guy that can really invigorate this Blue Jays team. And they certainly needed it again yesterday, getting behind in the game, not being able to get to the starters, offense clicking in that seventh or eighth inning there. But you know what? One of the most interesting things to me was the conversation now kind of starting to emerge with Cy Young Manoah. And I know we looked at the odds and he's not in that top two or three. There's a lot of guys that are probably a coin flip. But what does it mean in his young career to be already in that Cy Young chatter? And I know yesterday they showed Robbie Ray stats on the broadcast and they put them beside each other. And he's got very, very similar numbers to Blue Jays Cy Young winner last year.
Yeah, I think that, just a second. Sorry about that, guys.
It's all right. No worries.
All right. In my old age, I don't know how to work technology anymore, so I'm sorry about that.
It's all good.
Seasons are different. I think that there are many points to be made about how offense is down this year, and that makes the Cy Young competition a little bit maybe more fierce than it was last year. And I'm not taking anything away from Robbie Ray. We know that his season last year was absolutely phenomenal, but there are a few other contenders here this year that make things a little bit more interesting for a guy like Alek Manoah. Are his numbers Cy Young worthy? I would say 100%. I think that he will get votes. And in my mind, there have been times this year where there hasn't been anyone better than Alek Manoah. The fact that he is this consistent at this young age bodes extremely well for the rest of his career, and he is something that the Blue Jays should very actively be trying to sign to a long-term contract, because simply the fact that he has stayed healthy throughout this entire year in his first full MLB season, and even when he gets sick, he is still on the mound that same day, it's really, really impressive. And if he doesn't win the Cy Young this year, it certainly looks like it's on the horizon for Manoa. If not now, then a little bit later in his career.
He's certainly somebody who comes up big. He always knows how to step up and kind of own the moment. I do want to step back a bit, because it was a really long day yesterday at two baseball games. 1 o'clock start. Bit of a strange start to the first game with Manoa, obviously, getting sick and not being able to start as initially planned. Merriweather goes the first inning, and then Mitch White comes in and goes six frames. He doesn't come up and kind of own the moment, maybe in the same way of Alek Manoa, but he was a bit of an unsung. Maybe he was a little sung, but I think he deserves some credit, Mitch White, for what he did in the first game. They didn't win, and it's September. We don't love moral victories, but I thought that was pretty good kind of start, six innings for Mitch White,
yeah.
I think.
Especially when, you know, there was so much uncertainty around game two. He did mention that, you know, he got a little, kind of thrown for a loop a little bit there, in which the plan was for him to go in game two. He got a call asking him to be ready for game one, and that, you know, he sort of had to squeeze in his routine maybe a little bit faster than he would have liked. He was a bit shocked at the beginning, and then obviously he downplayed it post-game, said, no, it's no big deal, it's fine, I'm here for the team. But when you look at a guy like Mitch White, the fact that he has been struggling a little bit, right? His past three starts have not been ideal. I believe it was in Baltimore that he didn't make it past the third inning. Really struggling to put guys away. It seems like he gets ahead in counts, and then the put-away stuff just isn't there, or the ability to generate at least soft contact for an easy out on the field. So when you see Mitch White coming in, and kudos to Merriweather too, being an opener is not an easy job by any stretch of the imagination, but White coming in, allowing seven hits and three runs on six innings, that shows that there is some definite improvement, that he's been working on things and has thrived on it since being sent down to AAA. He mentioned talking a lot to Pete Walker and Kevin Gausman, and sort of trying to peel things back, slow things down, not try to be so nasty all the time with his pitches and just get the out. That was very clearly on display here. And he gave the Blue Jays that flexibility. You know, they didn't know if they could count on Alek Manoa for game two as he was recovering from his stomach bug. So John Schneider had no idea what the state of the bullpen would have been for game two. For him to eat those innings, allow David Phelps to come in and pitch two clean innings, that was huge. And it shows that he is very serious about carving out a role for himself in the long term with this team.
Is there going to be a role for Mitch White for the rest of the season, or do you think he'll get sent down again post this maybe stretch?
Yeah, the Blue Jays already sent him down to AAA last night. That was very quick, yeah.
Thanks for your service. See you next time.
that's the cruelty of doubleheaders, right? You get a 29th man, and then That's exactly it. Thanks so much, and see you again. But Mitch White will for sure be back. I don't expect his AAA stint to be too long here. The Blue Jays do need him. He, for all intents and purposes, is still this team's number five starter, and there is 20 games left in the season. They are probably going to need him again very soon. And as for the postseason, he's a very enticing guy to have out of the bullpen if you need multiple innings of relief. I would assume that is what the Blue Jays will do. That's what the strategy that they have in mind is just because of the type of pitcher that Mitch White is and the emphasis in getting him at the deadline, that flexibility, the versatility that he gives the Jays, either as a starter or as a bulk reliever. When the rotation does shrink for the postseason, it makes sense to have Mitch White there for that type of role.
So, yep, I think a little bit of prep time down there, a little bit of recovery time, work on your stuff, seems like the move, and also hopefully is a productive one. So Blue Jays are getting, as I mentioned, kind of like behind in games, especially yesterday, both times. How do they start to get at the opposing starters more? Is it a change in approach? Is it just a little bit of bad luck lately? And how do they, you know, rewrite that?
Yeah, it's funny, right? It's something that that John Schneider has talked about kind of extensively of late, because you have to, because the Blue Jays aren't doing it. And the funny thing about Jeffrey Springs, the game one starter yesterday, he has been extremely dominant. I think that we all saw how much the changeup was working for him yesterday, but he's a left-handed pitcher, and in a majorly righty lineup for the Blue Jays, that matchup should be very beneficial for Toronto. And so it's funny to see that, you know, on paper, what would work on paper has not been working in real life. Is there an explanation for it? Honestly, I don't know. This lineup is so talented, and the fact that it's taking them a bit to get going more often than not, especially at home, is one of those late season mysteries to me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we know that these guys are grinding. They have talked about it. They talked about it yesterday too. George Springer with the elbow. Teoscar Hernandez is obviously playing through pain. Bo Bichette mentioned a couple of nights ago, you know, I'm just playing through, my body is numb, I'm just going with it. That may have something to do with it. And then just seeing a little bit more pitches, working the counts, making sure that you give the guys that are coming behind you in that lineup a chance to get a good look at a guy and what he's doing and what's working for him on any given night. There may be a little bit of an over-aggression to start the game, because obviously everyone understands what this moment represents and what is expected of the Blue Jays, and that might be getting to them a little bit. I would say that you don't necessarily need to do tremendous amounts of damage against a starter like Jeffrey Springs, who has been so good, but working the count, getting that pitch count up, and driving him out of the game a little bit earlier might be the best play, because we know that the Rays have a depth of pitching, but they also have guys that are unproven and that are pitching this late in the season with a lot on the line for this team. So that's what I would say. It's sort of controlling that over-aggressiveness and trusting the talent, right? Because this lineup it has a lot of it for sure.
Julia, last one from me here is, you know, we've talked so much about Bo Bichette and how great he's looked. He's got one of the hottest bats in Major League Baseball lately, but it can't always be the Bo show, right? You want to get some scoring from up and down the lineup. We saw that in the latter half of game two last night. Do you think that's something that this group can kind of build off of and start getting kind of more consistent offense from guys not only named Bo Bichette?
Yeah, no, really. Bo has cooled down, really, you know? He's just batting .482 now in September.
Yeah, slow.
Should we be concerned about Bo Bichette?
It is very much something that the Blue Jays are focused on. It's great that Bo Bichette has done what he's done in September. It's really fascinating to see sort of that resurgence and what has gone into it. But the Blue Jays need contributors up and down the lineup. Game two last night was definitely a good start for that. We saw Whit Merrifield with the biggest hit of the game, and something that he hasn't really been able to do for the Blue Jays since getting traded here. So certainly encouraging to see that. You have George Springer hitting his first home run since late August. Teoscar Hernandez hitting that double, that RBI double. So there were signs of that, but it goes back to consistency. And it's something that the Blue Jays have struggled with all year long. You look at Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He hit a double last night. He seems to be coming out of it. He's gotten a little more extra base hits of late than we have seen from him in September. It's tough to tell when exactly this team will click. We have seen the amount of talent and how quickly a game can be flipped because of it. Now, what Blue Jays fans can do is hope that that moment of, well-rounded baseball is still to come, because it's very clear that this team has not yet played its best baseball this year.
It's actually a great thing to hear, because there's room for growth, there's room for improvement, and if you start doing that at the right time, September, October, then anything can happen. Julia, I know you mentioned the bottom of the lineup there clicking and coming up clutch yesterday. I think a lot of that credit goes to John Schneider for his management, putting guys in positions to succeed and making some adjustments. What did you make of his bench management last night?
Yeah, it was really impressive to see, and I think that strategy is the name of the game, especially when you're playing a team like the Tampa Bay Rays. So working those matchups, knowing when to bring in a guy like Whit Merrifield to optimize his potential, to optimize his impact, it's really fascinating to see, and it is commendable. It's kudos to him for sure. I think that often those moves don't really produce that type of result, and so when it does, it must be highlighted. So the amount of preparation that goes into optimizing those matchups, and you will hear Whit Merrifield say last night, how does one get ready for a moment like that, right? When you're cold, you haven't seen a pitch all game, and there was a previous spot in that game in which Merrifield could have been called upon and Schneider decided not to. It is a game of chess, and that's what it's going to be moving forward from here on out. And yes, John Schneider's strategy, preparation, and the way that he has managed has been really, really good and has allowed the Blue Jays to have offensive innings such as the seventh and the eighth yesterday. But also the ability of these players, of these bench players, to buy into what is being done, understand what their role is, what their task is, and execute. I think that is the biggest thing. And it's not easy to do. It's not easy to come in and pinch hit in a game of that magnitude in the seventh inning, right? Mm-hmm. So the planning is phenomenal, and the execution was even better.
Julie, appreciate you joining us this morning. Everyone should go check out your article on Vlad and Teo's friendship. I thought that was a really nice story. That's on MLB.com. A little feel-good story for everybody. Even though things are good right now in Blue Jays land, it can always be a little better. You can read this beautiful story that Julia wrote. Appreciate it. We'll talk with you soon.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great day.
Julia Kreutz, Blue Jays reporter at MLB.com and contributor at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This article I'm talking about is how Vlad and Teo's friendship centers the Blue Jays. I know the vibes are always high on this team, and everybody really praises the energy and the way they love each other. It's a really great, insightful story on their friendship.
We love that. We do love the cozy friend vibes.
And things are good when they're playing well. So
that's right.
Keep it rolling. Time for Something to Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum. Not alligator, but we do have a lot of text the text line that I will sprinkle in before we take a break about what y'all are eating. But yesterday, the Calgary Flames announced that Rebecca Johnson, four-time Olympian, three-time gold medalist, will be joining in a full-time role in the team's player development department, where she's going to assist with prospect evaluation and on-ice instruction. After this year, she also has been involved in their grassroots programming. She was a guest coach at the Flames prospect camp in July when she wasn't attending the Women's World Championships this year. It's an awesome transition that we've seen in women being able to have NHL roles. Now, she's not retiring, but she's taking this as an opportunity to continue to develop as a player and as a coach. Mm-hmm. And this has been a very positive year for NHL collaboration. You know, Marie-Philippe Poulin obviously mm-hmm. joining the Habs, and Haley Wickenheiser been in a really great role with the Maple Leafs, and now you have Johnny in her role with the Flames. It's just, it's a really...
Johnny Hockey's back.
Johnny Hockey. Lots of Johnny Hockeys. It's just really great to see. And as someone that knows and respects these players as well, I'm really proud that they're getting these opportunities, and it's about time. If it's like one thing happened, one player and one woman got, you know, put in a position to succeed, and now you're seeing that trend continue.
Well, it opened the doors up, and I think that's important. I think there was this kind of, I feel like the real shift, I know Haley Wickenheiser with the Leafs was doing that for a while, but I really think things really started to open up when you saw the Seattle Kraken coming in, and they hire Alexandra Mandrycki in the analytics role. And she actually, just this morning, this just came out, that she's been promoted by the Kraken to assistant general manager.
There you go.
Becoming the sixth woman elevated to that position this offseason alone, mm-hmm. and the first to be, you know, have a specialization in analytics. And prior to this year, only one woman had ever served as an assistant general manager for an NHL team. That was Angela George for the Ducks back in 96-97. So you've got an assistant GM roles. You have Mandrycki, Kate Medigan. I'm so sorry if I didn't pronounce that properly. She's been promoted to AGM in New Jersey. You have Megan Hunter in Chicago, Haley Wickenheiser in Toronto, Emily Castonge and Cammy Granato mm-hmm. in Vancouver. And I think it's just been really great to see. I mean, you look at those names and some of them are just legends.
And some of them aren't in women's hockey players either. And I love that you don't have to be an Olympian to do this.
No, like Alexandra Mandrycki is very, very smart. Like, this is a really smart analytical mind. Being elevated into a higher position with an NHL club. And I think you, again, just kind of going back to Rebecca, you know, she is an elite athlete. She was one of the longest tenured players on the Canadian women's national team that won gold in Beijing, won gold at the Olympics last year in Calgary. She's been around for a long time. She knows how to win. She knows how to elevate her game. She's mm-hmm. faced some adversity. She basically blew up her Achilles tendon last summer. Got cut from a team before that, came back from being cut and destroying her Achilles, and then made the team and won two more gold medals. And so she's somebody who can, that's somebody who you want young players learning from. Again, she knows how to win. She knows how to face that adversity. So I think it's a really nice step to see somebody like Rebecca go into Calgary and try to help some of these young players, because they've got a decent prospect pool. They've got some good young talent mm-hmm. down there. And obviously she's going to be able to learn from the organization, you know, Daryl Sutter, Cale McLean, the different coaches, the different people in that front office. And she's going to be able to learn and grow as somebody, as a coach or a front office person. And I think it's great to see people being, women given this chance to grow and develop as coaches and front office people.
Couldn't agree more. And I'm going to have her on the Ailish Hour. 9 a.m. Get to hear from Rebecca Johnson herself. Very excited to chat with her. Our next guest after the break, huge get by producer Danielle. Kay Adams, host of Up and Adams on FanDuel TV. Absolute elite guest. Let's get her NFL week one thoughts and also a little bit of fantasy football. Waiver wires on. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
We're back on The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Haley and Ailish. Check out The Fan Morning Show podcast. Give us 5 stars, download, subscribe. Would appreciate that very much. Because, you know, after this next guest, we might be giving away something special. It's called Good Karma. I got an opportunity to sit down and chat with someone I admire very much, Kay Adams, yesterday. She gave us a lot of good stuff. Pretty good get, producer Danielle. Here's Kay Adams.
So, so honored to be joined by our next guest, Kay Adams, host of Up and Adams on FanDuel TV. Hey, Kay, thanks so much for joining this morning.
Ailish, I'm so excited. Good morning to you. Week 2 is almost here.
Oh, I can't wait. I just first want to say congrats on the new show. And I know it's been a fun transition over. How has everything been with the new gig?
It's super fun. I have an hour to sort of do what I want. So we're changing it up every day. And I think my favorite part so far is letting these insanely talented and plugged in reporters and beat reporters and writers that are with these teams day in, day out, sort of giving them a platform to tell us what they're seeing and what they know. And I've learned so much. And these are, you know, reporters who have always read their material, and I was never able to do my job on Good Morning Football without them. So getting some of that and building sort of a fun network across all 32 has been really, really fun. And we're just switching it up every day and reacting to news. And it's just been such a blast, and I just can't wait to keep going.
I know one of the reasons that you were excited for this transition was for a new challenge and something that's really innovative. It seems that you found that type of fit. Is that right?
It's, you know, it totally is. It's, you know, you can't really reinvent the wheel with sports or football, but it's a game that I love so much. And I think FanDuel is so interested and invested in bringing content. We have some really big things up on the horizon, and we'll have some really big guests as well. So I'm just really excited to sort of do my own thing, build something new. You know, building Good Morning Football was so rewarding, and I thought that I did such good work there. So I'm excited to embrace what's ahead.
100%. I mean, I've been a big fan of everything you've been able to do. This is a really cool, exciting change. We'll definitely be keeping an eye on everything. And so with week one.
Thank you, Ayla.
Oh, my God, of course. with week one done and dusted, I've been able to see some of your big takeaways. And that definitely started with the New York Giants. Just that the big gutsy 2-point play, the new coach looking like he's got some faith in his team and his strategy. What are you expecting from the Giants this season?
It's such a good question. I'm so happy. I think that's just I'm reveling in this feeling of happiness. Obviously, I lived in New York the past 10 years. There wasn't much to celebrate. And Saquon Barkley is someone who I respect a lot, someone who I've personally talked to over the years about his injuries, you know, the lack of productivity of what he wanted when he entered the league. And he always really impressed me with how he embraces the adversity. He says, "Kay, it makes me better to go through that." And he told me that year he was injured, that first year, it was the best year of his career, including college and Penn State. It was, and I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "It's something I never faced. And it's going to make me better." And I'll look at him to see him so emotional on the sidelines, to have veterans like Sterling Shepard, who've been through it all with that team, sort of hugging Brian Daboll. It just shows you how meaningful Daboll's presence is. And I think, you know, Buffalo fans can attest to that. And he really got the best out of Josh Allen. And I think he deserves so much credit for all of the leaps that Allen was able to take from year one to year two and so on. So I expect them to contend. I expect him to try to get the best out of Daniel Jones. I'm not convinced he's the answer. We all saw Daboll giving him a piece of his mind on the sidelines, which I'm sure New York Giants fans were obsessed with, as I was. Do I expect them to win the NFC East? No, I actually think the Eagles look so strong, and I called that last week. That was my kind of the only division winner that I predicted, which was the Eagles. I think those guys play so hard for Sirianni, even in games that aren't great or meaningful. And I just feel like Jalen Hurts, if we can just get the best out of him with this receiving core, with Devontae Smith, who was quiet week one, but it's great to have him there. And A.J. Brown, to me, is such a difference maker. So I think the East belongs not to the Cowboys. Sorry.
Oh, definitely not.
To the Eagle. I know. Those Cowboys, they just can't get it together.
Are we surprised? It seems like it was written in the stars at times. And with, you know, with the injury now, the issues with the Cowboys. And do you think this is a bit forward thinking. And after week one, people love to do overreactions. But are you kind of seeing the validity and maybe writing them off this season?
I mean, yeah. I mean, how can you not, right? The offensive line's an issue. You lose Dak Prescott. Jerry Jones, love him to death. He's such an optimist. He's coming out on, you know, early this week telling radio stations locally that, you know, he expects Dak back and to avoid the IR. You know, Jerry Jones is a lot of things, a lot of respect for him. He's not a doctor. So I you know, he always likes to set an optimistic-looking timeline for things. I hope he's right. I root for Dak Prescott. But listen, they need Gallup back. all eyes on the field are on CeeDee Lamb. You can't expect CeeDee Lamb can be the best wide receiver in the National Football League and will not be able to produce or get anything done. Payroll and I've got, you know, Kevontae Turpin is a special teamer. It's like the wide receiving core is really, really concerning to me. And with the quarterback, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, let's bring in Jimmy G. Did the Cowboys look great when Dak was out there? Is this a team that's contending for a Super Bowl this year? For Jerry's sake, I hope so. But I don't think you pull that deal unless you're an absolute contender in the NFC. I don't believe them to be, at least not now.
Yeah, and you know, I think we're all in a line with it. It wasn't just the Dak Prescott issue. I think it really kind of exposed a lot more holes that definitely needed to be filled. And on the other side of the field, you know, Tom Brady back for his historical next year. He never wants to really retire. Don't know if he's going to be on that sneaky television show or not, but all the off the field drama aside, what are you expecting from a guy that, you know, Father Time just really doesn't seem to impact him much?
It doesn't. I want the storybook ending for him. I think he's earned it. I think, you know, when he leaves and doesn't want to be a part of training camp, there's very few, and he's probably the only player, maybe in any sport, that sort of has a leg to stand on and can do whatever he wants because he shows that he can, you know, perform at that level still. And maybe it is the best thing for his body at this point to take some of those breaks away and to focus on other things. You know, he's dealt with adversity his entire career. He's dealt with distractions on the field, drama on the field, storylines, and off the field. Really, like, you know, he's dealt with family illness. He's dealt with, you know, things that all of us humans deal with and have to compartmentalize. He, you know, the idea of him not being all in is absurd. You know, if they don't succeed this year, it's because of his offensive line. It's because of him not being able to, you know, tie his shoes behind that offensive line like he has through every Super Bowl team that he sort of had. I'm really curious about the addition of Julio Jones. I'll say that, you know, they're running the ball, Leonard Fournette. I don't know how long he'll keep it up. Cause he's got, you know, a lot of wear and tear, but if they can balance the offense like that, and Julio Jones is just like a Tom Brady player, right? Mm-hmm. He's, you know, not what we're used to in the New England offense, of course, but Julio Jones is someone who feels like he has something to prove. I think Tom Brady is going to dig into that and elevate that. And he looked very much like he had flashes of prime Julio Jones, which is absolutely terrifying alongside Mike Evans. So I'm at a point with Tom that I hope he gets what he wants. I hope he finds peace. I don't know what that looks like for him. Hopefully he's not bloody and losing a game to the Rams and all said and done like last year.
Sometimes I wonder if he knows what that looks like for himself as well.
I don't know. I've never been obsessed with anything as much as he's obsessed with football. So I don't even know what that's like.
Oh, I thought the Michael Jordan hype video as well going into, you know, Sunday Night Football primetime was really, really cool as well to get the GOATs on the same screen. But, yeah, it obviously will never be a storyline that we stop looking at. You know, he's got the career after football as well. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves in terms of what's next and just can't wait to see what he does on the field. And talking about, you know, quarterbacks with lofty expectations, you know, Josh Allen in his first Bills appearance this season, it was dominant. The hype around the Buffalo Bills, especially where we are up in Toronto, right over the border from Buffalo, it's palpable up here. It's fun to be immersed in what we kind of call the extended Bills Mafia up here. What did you just make of their first big staple appearance last week?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, you know, I just think week one is drunk. I think week one, you can't, you know, if there's emotional games like what we saw between, you know, Russell Wilson and his former team out there in Seattle. And then there's just rust. And then there's, you know, I'll say this. To me, it was more a story about the Rams. They were lifeless, absolutely soulless. They didn't show up for that game. It was so strange and so weird. You know, Ramsey, best shutdown corner in the business, you know, it was just a mess. It was a mess on the Rams side, so I want to see what the Bills look like. Josh Allen, though, and that entire team, mine is Dable, showed up in midseason form. Rams looked like they were in the preseason, and Josh Allen, even as far as Gabe Davis, somebody who started to emerge last year, that's carrying right over to this season. and he's getting it done. The confidence for Stephon Diggs, who's historically struggled against Jalen Ramsey or doesn't get too many looks, him having his way on the field is such a nice confidence booster. You know, Josh Allen lost some of the receivers who I thought that were important to him over the years, and hope, you know, I think, you know, the Beasleys, the Emmanuel Sanders, that made a difference, I think, when he was on the field. But then sort of leaning on the run game a little bit more, give it to Singletary, take it a little bit off Josh Allen. I loved it. I will say, super curious about the Titans, who they have this week. It's a really fun matchup. It didn't work out for the Bills last year, if you remember. The Bills went for a 4th-and-1. Allen's heroics didn't work out. The Bills actually lost to the Titans the year before as well. So I'm super curious to see if they can sort of break the streak against a team that the past couple seasons they've struggled against.
What do they say? Two's lucky, three's a trend or something. Hopefully they could stop that in its tracks.
Especially with the Titans just getting beat by the Giants, right? So like you don't want to all of a sudden be the team that loses to the Titans. So it'll be a big game, and I'm excited for it.
100%. So you say week one was drunk. I think you said it perfectly. Which was weirder for you? Bengals Steelers end or Seahawks Broncos end?
Oh my God! Way to ask me an absolutely impossible question.
You can say both.
The Broncos thing was just it's nauseating. I feel so, you know, I just feel so bad for their fans because they finally have a quarterback. They take it out of his hands, and then, you know, you look at the Broncos fan base. They had Vic Fangio. The main criticism on Fangio is, you know, those end game situations. Can he get it done? And he never really could. And then you bring in Hackett and think this is great, and then he mismanages the time at the end of the game. So it was a disaster. And I think it's, you know, Russell Wilson's coming out and saying all the right things, and of course he doesn't want to show his frustration. I can't imagine how you remain confident in your head coach going forward, or how he remains confident. They're starting in the hole, you know, in more ways than just with the box score. So that was just insane. 64 yards is insane. It's so stupid that I don't understand how it happened. But I will say, you know, that's week one. And if Geno Smith is like the second coming of you know, Joe Montana, great. I'm happy for him. Let him rewrite his story. It's so hard to do in the NFL. We put people in a box and never allow them to leave it. And then, you know, Russell Wilson, I kind of, you know, we oversold the Broncos. It was so... I'm a huge fan of undersell, over-deliver, just in life. The Seahawks, nobody was talking about them. They came out and kicked ass. The Broncos, completely overhyped, and now could be in the bottom of the AFC West the entire year. So he'll try to dig his way out. If you know anything about Russell Wilson, he's going to try harder or as hard as anyone in the league to do it. So we'll see. The Bengals thing, I'm not worried about the Bengals at all. 5 turnovers and you almost win that game? Mm-hmm. They should have lost that game by 30.
I mean, it was incredible to watch that overtime. Also, 2 2020 overtimes happening at the same time. It was like, I couldn't consume all that television. I felt rusty myself, like having to sit there and watch Sunday football. I didn't feel like I was in my groove, right? It kind of takes some getting back into the groove of things.
It's so true. And I'm in LA and I don't have TVs or anything. I just moved last minute and I'm looking and I'm like, oh, Amon-Ra Saint Brown scored. And then you look and like, Equanimeous Saint Brown scored. You're just like looking and you're so right. You have to get, you know, we should have did this all preseason and gotten in shape.
Did you feel like there was a little bit, I know those 1 o'clock games, especially there was like some really, I don't know, sketchy starts, a lot of fumbles, turnovers, picks. It was a funny comment that we had on the show. It was like, should teams be playing their starters a bit more before the season begins? Cause it looked a little bit rusty at times.
Yeah, it definitely did. And you want the best product out on the field, but you also want to protect your starters, right? So we're balancing this fine line of what works. We added an extra game, which is, if you look at last year and how it shook out in the playoffs, a great thing, and it was awesome. So, you know, I was talking to Jeff Schwartz, former NFL veteran, who's completely, you know, telling me, like, the offensive line, they need to be out there playing these starters. And I go, easy for you to say, you're not playing anymore. Like, you know, I was joking with him about it. But he mentioned something interesting on Up and Adams today, and he was just saying that the Chiefs play all of their starters. Like, your offensive line, you're playing. You're gelling, because how else do you know how you really play together, especially that position? And if we saw anything in week one, is how much offensive line gelling matters. The Packers, it sucked. You saw, you know, Rodgers obliterated and on his ass most of the, you know, most of the game, or a lot more than we would like for our, you know, aging and back-to-back MVP. And you saw the same thing with any game you can sort of point to. I mean, look at the Bengals. They had a new-look offensive line. And you look at the Chiefs and what Mahomes was able to do. Mahomes might be the most impressive thing to come out of week one. That offensive line played well. He didn't need Tyreek Hill. You know, he doesn't need him, which is a huge thing. They didn't even try to replace him. They added depth. He's throwing it all around the field, getting Clyde Edwards-Helaire involved, Juju, Sky Moore, Kelsey, Hardman, and making it look easy. And it's hard to not think that that has to do with Andy Reid rolling them out there in preseason.
You know, it's funny. We had the same kind of thought about Patrick Mahomes. I feel like, and as crazy it is to state this, he was almost underrated this offseason. All the hype was Josh Allen's going to be this guy this year. The Bills. And we watched that game, and I thought, oh, no, I forgot how good Patrick Mahomes is. If 5 touchdowns, that team just looks so dialed in. It's like, okay, did we maybe lose a little bit of the narrative with what Patrick Mahomes can do?
Well, there was a bit of a Super Bowl hangover, and I really felt like he was pushing things a little bit much these past couple of seasons, trying to get back there, trying to do it all on his own. And, you know, maybe we'll find out as the season goes on that he had eyes and he was zero, you know, he was locked in and trying to target his guy the entire time, meaning, you know, Tyreek Hill. And maybe when the absence of him sort of left him spread the ball a little bit more. And it's a huge deal. You know, Aaron Rodgers missed Davante Adams. Davante Adams, despite having a good game statistically, missed Aaron Rodgers. You know, like that gels. It's rare you find that. And it's even more rare and so much more impressive when you have two elite players like Tyreek Hill and Patrick Mahomes that are going to thrive without each other. And that looks like what it's at least starting to be this season.
Honestly, there's so many great storylines coming out of week one, especially with my fantasy team. And I know you're really great with helping with some waiver pickups. I need some help. I lost bad. I don't know. I don't want to start from behind, but I'm in the hole. So I was hoping you could give me some favorite week two waiver pickups. I mean, I lost my matchup majorly. Like, it was just domination station. A tough way to start. Other than Justin Herbert being a hero for me, nobody really performed up to standards.
Amazing.
So I know we actually have a league here.
I'll start there. So Justin Herbert's going to throw. Justin Herbert's going to throw to Austin Eckler, who I talked to a couple of weeks ago about how this, you know, they're all gelling even more this year. They pretty much had all of their starters come back at skill positions, but Keenan Allen got banged up, and that happens sometimes. We know Keenan Allen, you know, doesn't stay upright. Josh Palmer is somebody that I'd go grab if you're looking for a wide receiver, right? He's a second-year guy. He didn't do much week one, but Keenan Allen goes out, and there was a game last year that Keenan Allen missed, and Palmer showed up. He had 7 targets. He caught 5 of them. He had a touchdown, 66 yards. Just the way the faith you have in Herbert and in this offense, like you and the offensive line, like you've got to just get any piece of what that offense looks like. And I think Josh Palmer can be played. And I think he's rostered in like less than 5% of NFL.com leagues. So I like him a lot. I'm trying to think. If you lost Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz looked awesome. And you can't tell me it's because of the Jags, because he, with the Colts, lost to the Jags big time in week 18 and didn't show up. So I'm really impressed with Carson Wentz. His debut, first year in this offense, and he was the top 3 scoring fantasy quarterback. Only Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen had better days. Do I think he stays there? No, but if you look at it, the Lions coming up, the Eagles, the Cowboys, those should be high-scoring games for him. And who else did I like? Oh, Najee. Nobody's talking about the Najee thing, right?
I have Najee.
Oh, I know. Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, so you have to get Jaylen Warren. That's his backup.
Okay.
I'm so worried about Najee. I'm like, why is no one talking about this Liz Franck injury? They have Mitchell Trubisky. The best way to use him is to feed him the rock, you know? It's something I wish Carolina would have done with Christian McCaffrey, which they didn't got away from this past week, hopefully. So Christian bounces back. But, yeah, Jaylen Warren is somebody that you just – it sucks, but it's true. He's an undrafted rookie out of Oklahoma State, but you got to add him.
Okay, you've given me so many notes. I'm on my fantasy page.
Yay!
Pinning stuff. So appreciate
I'm so glad.
It so much.
You know, I love fantasy football. Yeah, I love fantasy football. It's like my passion. So that'll be on my show every day. Like every day,
good.
I'm up in Adams, 11 a.m. on FanDuel TV. It's also on YouTube after the show. We post it and in full. And we have, you know, follow us at Up in Adams or Hey K Adams on Twitter and Instagram. And we will get you guys all of that goodness when it comes to fantasy.
Amazing. I'm hoping with me having the morning show hours where I'm up at like 4 that I get a little bit of a head start on this stuff, and then I can take that advantage into my league and get the scoop earlier than most. Kay, I really appreciate you joining today. All the insight. We'll definitely circle back with you for some more craziness this season and wish you all the best with the new role.
Anytime. And thank you for being so supportive and just you keep kicking butt.
Oh, thanks so much. I really appreciate it. Kay Adams.
Great to sit down with her. She's continuing to be a star in the industry, giving a lot of great stuff on Up and Adams on FanDuel. As I said, and as she mentioned, it's her new show Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on FanDuel TV. You can also check her out on social media and Up and Adams show, and obviously at Kay Adams. She is a wonderful guest. Hope to chat with her midway through the season and see where we're at with my fantasy team and with the NFL season. So speaking of, as I said, good guests and good karma, it's time to give away a pair of Toronto Maple Leafs preseason tickets. Pull out your phones. It's time. Maple Leafs start their 2022-2023 season next weekend, and we're giving away tickets all week long for the preseason game on September 24th, the 1 p.m. preseason game, because there's a doubleheader. So we've got clarification. It's at 1 p.m. against the Ottawa Senators. All you have to do is text 59590, today's code word, Marner. Text Marner to 590-590 for your chance to win Leafs preseason tickets. Marner. That's September 24th, 1 p.m. It's going to be a great doubleheader at Scotiabank Arena against the Ottawa Senators Battle of Ontario. Good luck. And I wanted to sprinkle in a couple of those texts from our previous conversation about if you missed the A-list, go back and check it out on the Fan Morning Show podcast. But the Florida Gators lost, and we were talking about people eating entire lobster. I mean,
lobster.
I just saw the word lobster in the text line. Eating entire gators. Disgusting. But what are the weirdest things that you've eaten? Apparently, a lot of people have had gator, which is very strange. Bobby in St. Catharines says, it literally tastes a bit more like fatty chicken. Have you ever seen lobster or crab presented? It's delicious, but the nastiest looking thing to see anyone eat. Kangaroo salami is the most random thing, though. So good.
Oh. I know that. Like eating gators, like it's not a wild thing like that, that it happens. I think just to see it presented in the way that we did was just a little bit horrifying.
The second most popular random thing that people have eaten in this text line is kangaroo. Andrew in St. John said he had kangaroo. Apparently he was raised on a farm in BC. Does that make it less authentic? It's not an Australian kangaroo. The BC kangaroo.
My God.
Paul in Wasaga Beach says he also had gator in Florida. It's not bad at all. I was very surprised. Steve from Georgina. Shout out Georgina. I've had alligator and kangaroo tail at a family barbecue. What kind of barbecues are you guys having in Georgina? At the Legion.
I mean, I've been in Florida and I've told you, like, there's places called Gators and you go and get like gator nuggets and stuff. So I don't know.
Daniel.
Gator nuggets.
Gator nuggets. Not available at your local fast food chain, but maybe
personally else. Haven't seen them here in Toronto, but.
Daniel in Toronto says, I've eaten ostrich. Very gamey, but okay. Brad from Allison. Alligator jerky is great. You get it in a lot of stores in Florida.
Yeah.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum, yum.
That's your jerky. Yum, yum, yum. Ryan in Schaumburg. Alligator tastes like fishy pork. Okay, well, that ruined it for me. Fishy pork, not something that I'm, run out to get.
No, God, please, no, no.
I'll pass.
Okay.
But you do you. Like, you this do is you. A, I'm not judging. I'm just not going to eat it.
One more Toronto flavor here. Ryan in Oakville says that he had kangaroo sausage at, I believe this is pronounced Wurst, W-V-R-S-T, Wurst, Wurst. It's like, you know, that place on King Street.
Yeah.
W-V-R-S-T. No Verst. Vowels needed. Verst.
I don't know if that's right.
Worst would be a tough name for a restaurant.
Yeah.
versed. Anyway.
They have it there?
Apparently they have it there.
Gator or kangaroo? Sorry.
That was kangaroo sausage.
I just didn't realize that I mean,
it's local.
Whatever. I just didn't even realize that that was a thing that was available en masse.
Well, okay, last one. Oh, God.
Oh, no. Maybe don't.
I got to do it. Cody from Toronto. I have had bull's blood in Spain. Way better than you'd think.
Okay. It's like blood sausage and stuff. It's probably more common than you think. Maybe not like a cup of
blood. Like a shot? Like in an espresso? Oh, Cody. All right. That's
going to need more context.
Too much. There's lots more. Maybe we'll sprinkle that in, but let's get back on track with things that make us feel good. The Toronto Blue Jays. Caleb Joseph after the break. Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.